Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Hello, Luke O'Neill here, and welcome to Show Me the Science, my weekly podcast. And I'm with Tom, new producer. Great to have you on board, Tom. It's wonderful, and Tom's making all kinds of suggestions. There's no knowing what we might come up with together. And this first topic is actually from Tom, and it's the science of hay fever and allergy and the various drugs we can use to treat allergies. And it's fairly current because obviously we're in the summertime now. Allergy levels go through the roof. Amazingly high incidence, and we all know someone with it. I think it's something like 1 in 3 will have some kind of allergic reaction in the summertime, mainly to pollen, as I'll explain. So it's very popular as a topic for people, and it's very important. Now, we all know the symptoms. Let's define it as we do with everything scientific. Your eyes swell up, your nose runs, you get a bit itchy in your skin. They're the more benign symptoms, actually. As it gets more severe, a bad headache is a feature, earache can be a feature, and bad fatigue. And all of these things are kicking off in your body because you're allergic to pollen, as I will explain in a minute. The more medical term is allergic rhinitis, and that tells us exactly what it is. It's an allergy. And what rhinitis means is inflammation of the nose. Now, anything ending in itis means inflammation. So if it's colitis, it's your colon. If it's dermatitis, it's your skin, from derma for skin. If it's arthritis, it's your joint, from arthus, which means joint. What is rhino? Rhino is your nose. It's a word for nose, hence that's why it's called allergic rhinitis. The main reason it's called that is your nose really gets affected. The pollen goes in up your nose, and that's the first bit to overreact and show all these different symptoms. Now, the word allergy is interesting. That's a very important word if you're an immunologist. I would say something like 1 in 4 immunologists work on allergy of various kinds. And what it's defined as is a hypersensitivity to something. So your immune system is overreacting to some substance, goes into overdrive and causes the various symptoms. In fact, many diseases could be considered allergic because so many of them involve the immune system going into overdrive. So the word allergy simply means you're overreacting. Now, of course, any of us that inhale things up our nose, and it might be pollen or any chemical, you will get an immune reaction to it because your immune system is there to expel the nasty thing. It's a key function of the immune response. And we all do that, by the way. And all that's happening here is you're doing too much of it. It's hypersensitive, and we'd love to know why. I'll come back as to what the ideas are around the basis for this in a minute. But it's simply a normal process that goes into overdrive and causes all these various symptoms. And the same applies to any itis, actually. In the case of rheumatoid arthritis, your immune system goes into overdrive in your joints. In the case of psoriasis, it's in your skin. So it's very, all these things are very similar, and they're very much in the wheelhouse, if that's the phrase, of immunology. Now, let's go back to the history of it and try to look at that, because it's often good to look at the history of these things. The very first doctor to say there was something funny going on with pollen was a guy called Charles Blackley. And he noticed when he walked through the fields on a beautiful June morning, he began to get the symptoms of, you know, hay fever. And he wondered what was going on. And that is where all science starts, actually, with someone having the gall to ask a question. And Charles wondered, what is making my nose run and making me sneeze and making my eyes water? And then he noticed something else, that when the hay fields were cut, all chopped down, he didn't get hay fever anymore when he walked through the fields. So, of course, he wondered, there's something coming off the crop in the field. Now, that's a good hypothesis, but as a good scientist, he wanted to try to prove that. What did he do? He took samples of air over a hay field, fully growing hay field, and he rubbed some of that sample of the air, he might have put his fingers into it and get some stuff out of it, I guess, into his eyes, and guess what? He produced tears. So he knew there was something in the air coming off the hay field. Now again, as I say lots of times on this podcast, where's your control experiment? The control was he took gathered air off a field that had been cut, and that air didn't do anything to him. So again, he knew there was something coming off the hay field. Now by then, we're talking in the 1850s, the microscope had been invented, and that's a key tool for us immunologists because everything's very, very small. And what did he do? He looked down the microscope at the sample of air, and he saw these little dusty particles. And he knew from reading about it that was the thing called pollen. Now, pollen is released by plants, it drifts through the air, and it fertilizes another plant. It's a very important plant of part of plant reproduction. So he said that maybe it's the pollen that's causing this thing. Next, what did he do? He managed to concentrate the pollen. Now, he did that by sort of concentrating the air using various technologies. He was able to concentrate the thing down. And guess what? That really drove his eyes into overdrive. So now he had it. And he publishes a paper on this. And no less a figure then my hero, Charles Darwin, the man who came up with evolution, he read Blackley's paper, wrote to him immediately, and he said, "This is astonishing work," he says, "that something in the air would be causing this to happen in people." And he was very congratulatory because, of course, Darwin was a great scientist himself. He looked at the data. And always remember, I always say this as well, look at the data that supports what you're saying. And lo and behold, Blackley had cracked this in many ways. The second thing he did, very interesting, he said, let's have a pollen count. He was the first to have the notion of calculating the amount of pollen in the air. And every day on the radio, you will hear the pollen count announced. If it's very high, watch out if you've got hay fever. That began with Blackley trying to help people. Most doctors, mercifully, are trying to help people. Then the next part of the history was other scientists get involved. They wonder, are there any plants that are especially notorious for this? And indeed they are. Strangely, it's not hay. So as ever, things get a misnomer. The crop that makes hay, the wheat in the hay field, doesn't produce much pollen. There was other plants in the field actually probably releasing the pollen in Blackley's case. So it's a slight misnomer. We know things like birch, poplar, hazel, ryegrass, ragweed, which we're familiar with. Nettles are very bad sources. They seem to produce a huge amount of pollen, and people will notice this if they've got hay fever. If they're around those kinds of plants, they will get an attack. So they seem especially troublesome at making the pollen. What's interesting is we all differ slightly. So I might be allergic to nettles, and someone else it might be birch. And that's interesting. We don't quite know why that is. Probably the pollen is slightly different and our bodies are reacting differently to the different types of pollen. So we're not quite sure why that is. But still, we know different plants do it and some are especially mischievous. Now, that was all defined, oh, I'd say over 100 years ago now. And again, the question became, what the hell is going on? Now, again, scientists begin looking at this. They take samples of the mucus coming down your nose. They take samples from your eyes. And guess what? It's full of the immune system. You can see all these immune cells in those fluids. So, of course, I said, this is an immune problem. And to cut a long story short, the cells were identified. A very important cell type called the mast cell is in the fluid. A cell type called eosinophils. You can't be these big names, I guess, and also B cells. They're the three main cell types. Now, if any immunologist listening in, this is bread and butter to you. If you're not, I will tell you what these cells are. Mast cells are very interesting. Their job actually is to sense chemicals and then release a thing called histamine. And the histamine is the chemical that lets all the fluids flow. So it gets mucus to be made to flush the stuff out. So the mast cell is on the front line here, especially in the nose and in the airways. And in the gut, actually, any sort of surface in the body, you will see mast cells and they will react to things. And one of the big things they do is they get you to flush the stuff out. And that was discovered over 70 years ago, actually. The eosinophils are interesting. They're similar. They can make histamine as well. They make other chemicals that add to the mix. And eosinophils actually are very important in a very severe type of allergy called asthma. And asthma is down the severe end of the spectrum, by the way. That's a huge overreaction in your lungs. And the eosinophils are especially important there. And then lastly, the B cell. What do B cells do? They make things called antibodies. And in this case, an antibody called IgE gets made. And again, you can imagine the excitement when this gets discovered back in the 40s and 50s, that they realise, oh, it's IgE. There are five types of antibody that your immune system has. IgE is only one of them. And this is the one that's made during allergy. And then it got even better, because what seems to happen is this. The B cell is the first cell to react. It can pick up on the pollen. It makes IgE. The IgE latches onto the mast cell, and that gets the mast cell to make the histamine. So it's a sequence of events here that were pinpointed, as I bet 50 years ago now, that sort of knowledge of IgE and mast cells was realised. Now, of course, once they had figured that out, guess what came next? Well, let's block these things. And lo and behold, drugs to stop histamine were developed about 30 years ago now. They're called antihistamines. And they stop the histamine latching on to your nose or your eyes. And remember, what does histamine do? It induces all the liquid to come out, all the tears and the mucus and all the sloppy stuff. That's what histamine is driving. So if you block histamine, you turn off those liquids being made, and now you get relief from the symptoms. Histamine is also what we call pro-inflammatory. Now, what that means is it opens up blood vessels to bring in more immune cells to kick out the pollen, as it were. And that opening of blood cells is what makes you go a bit red. And the redness around the eyes is called blood vessels are opening up to bring in the cells. Because remember, the cell types I mentioned are in your blood. They're circulating and patrolling your body. So histamine is a key factor of bringing them in. Now, another thing to mention, though, is it's not just histamine as ever. And it gets more and more complicated. And nowadays, if I was to take a mast cell in my lab, which we do from time to time actually, it makes about 100 things. So it's complicated and some of these synergize and we're still trying to get our heads around the full content. But given that histamine is a key player, blocking histamine does actually work in most people. Now you can imagine some people might make less histamine and they don't respond as well to antihistamines. And in fact, the second group of chemicals, another big word crunch for you, are called leukotrienes. Now, leukotrienes, I always tell the students, they're not named after me, Luke O'Neill. They're called leukotrienes because they're in leukocytes, white blood cells, and they've got three double bonds for the chemist. That's what triene means. Now, these are made, and these are much more potent than histamine. And what they do is they cause your airways to constrict. Now, this can be a good thing because if you slightly constrict your airways, you stop the pollen getting into your body. You know, simply the case of the airways constrict and the pollen can't get in. And that happens in all of us. The trouble is, if you make too many leukotrienes, you get what's called bronchospasm and the airways begin to close. Now, in asthma, that is really serious. The severe end, of course. And loads of leukotrienes get made in asthma. And guess what? There's a drug now to block leukotrienes, just like histamine. It's called Montelukast. And I did my PhD in London in a lab that discovered leukotrienes. So I follow the story of this very closely. So now there's another option, more down the severe end of the spectrum. Mild hay fever, you don't make much leukotrienes. It's only if it gets severe, then you might be taking leukotriene blockers. And especially in the context of asthma, it's very, very important. So these drugs are there. They work. There's also several other sort of other types of medication over the counter that can work a bit as well. Some of those are slightly more herbal remedy based, but there are other options there. But the mainstay treatment would be antihistamines and ways to block leukotrienes. Now, if things get really severe, you can use a thing called steroids. Now, steroids are very interesting. They were discovered in the 1940s as being anti-inflammatory. I may do a podcast on them because they've got a very interesting story themselves. But steroids are a very powerful anti-inflammatory drug. And if you have severe attack, you can inhale steroids and they work really well. They're potently anti-inflammatory. They turn off the mast cell, turn off the B cell, turn off the eosinophil, suppress the linings making all the mucus. So they're very powerful off switches for all of this. The trouble is they've got side effects and we can't take steroids long term because they can really harm you. So they're only ever used in very severe cases and sparingly, but they can be a lifesaver. And anybody listening who has asthma, I bet you got a steroid inhaler that you use sometimes and it really can relieve some of the symptoms of asthma. And they're a real addition, I guess, to the medicines that can be used, that can be deployed in these different situations. And then one last little thing to mention before I give you what's happening research-wise, you can desensitize yourself to these things. Now, the immune system is very clever. It can tell friend from foe, but it can overreact. And lo and behold, you can get it to turn itself down a bit by giving low amounts of the stuff that's provoking it. Now, we're not talking homeopathy here. I want to make that clear. There's no evidence for homeopathy at all. But you can give a little low dose of pollen and that can desensitize the immune system. And what's kind of happening there is you're showing the immune system the bad guy, but not too much of the bad guy. And then the immune system doesn't go into overdrive. And next time the real bad guy turns up, it doesn't overreact, is the idea. And this is quite useful for some people. It's a bit like your in-laws. You meet them in small doses and then you get on with them. That's the analogy I've used before. So it's a bit like, I'm sure you love your in-laws, it mightn't be that. But it's the notion here is a small dose of something can be beneficial in this situation. And then what's very interesting is, guess what can make people get allergy and hay fever and asthma in childhood if you're too clean? This is called the hygiene hypothesis, first proposed about 30 years ago now. They noticed that people who live on farms or in slightly dirty environments, now I don't mean nasty dirt, I'm talking regular dirt here, like you would get in a farm for instance, they get less allergies and less hay fever and less asthma. And what's happening there is when you're a baby, a little bit of dirt is training your immune system to behave itself and then it doesn't go into overdrive. It's a bit like your immune system needs to go to school and it's learning friend from foe. It's learning not to over. It's a bit like desensitization again. And lo and behold, there's good evidence now that if you expose babies and children in a farm to certain things that you might see, say in cow dung, I'm not joking, things are in the dirt that can actually be beneficial, that can give you relief and may prevent some of these things. So that's something that people are very interested in, because instead of going to your doctor and being told to spend time on a farm, which could be inconvenient, if we knew what was in the farm to desensitize people, that could be used as a medicine. And they're trying now to isolate stuff that might be useful there There's a thing called LPS, for instance, which I might talk about again, that might be useful. There's trials happening as we speak on some of these factors. They're probably inhaling as children and babies bits of bacteria, we think, that are more common on the farm. And of course, the immune system is great at sensing bacteria and responding. So you can see how a bit of bacteria might get the immune system into order and stops it going into overdrive, is the idea. Now, let's talk about the frontier, because these are so common. Hay fever, very common. Asthma, really common as well. We'd like to have better treatments. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could stop it in its tracks, really, and you wouldn't have to take the antihistamines or have that miserable day out and you've got to go to the pharmacy to get your meds or whatever. So the question is, can we do better? Now, where this is going is interesting. It turns out genetics is a key feature. Now, all of us are different, as we know, genetically. My face is different to yours. Equally, my immune system is slightly different to yours as well. And they're trying to hunt down the genes, the variants of genes, the version of a gene that's different in someone with hay fever versus someone who isn't. And they've honed in on something called IL-33. Now, I mention that because I worked on it about 20 odd years ago. It's a key immune system protein. And if you make too much of that, it really drives the allergic system crazy into massive overdrive. IL-33 brings out the B cells, brings out the mast cells. It's upstream of all those things, basically. And lo and behold, there are people with versions of that that are overactive. There's also people with versions of something called TSLP, another horrible mouthful. But this is where this work is going. We're pinning down at last the genetic basis for hay fever. Now, what that means is, if you're at risk of it, you might go to your doctor. They'll tell you you've got too much IL-33, and that'll be the thing to target. That'll stop the disease in its tracks for you. So it's called personalized medicine. We're heading in that direction, and that's a very exciting development. Now, not so much for hay fever, because it's a bit of a nuisance, hay fever, more than anything else. It's more things like severe allergies and severe asthma, which can be lethal. That's where that research is going. But even still, there might be a usefulness in them in targeting these things in hay fever as well. And very importantly, remember, if you have any worries or fears, go to your GP. They will advise you on what to do, what to take. If it's regular hay fever, they'll recommend an over-the-counter antihistamine, which works in the vast majority. If you describe your symptoms and they're more severe, they might consider a steroid inhaler. So it's very useful always to keep in touch with your GP if you feel any concerns about these things. And lastly, just to let you know, you're in very good company. So who has hay fever? Margot Robbie has severe hay fever. So has Nicole Kidman. And would you believe Gary Lineker, who's been in the news lately as well? He gets very severe hay fever. So it's very common. And you can think, if you have it, you're joining a very interesting group of people there with that particular condition. So that's it. The science of hay fever. Hope you got good information out of that. And any questions, do email me at laoneil with two L's at tcd.ie. And of course, my podcast is a news talk production, available every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.